Basketball Insider.
Some news and notes from around the world of college basketball.
In-studio correspondent for WFAN and CBS Sports Radio.
Attention, please, to John Rothstein. Please report to St. Joe's.
The Insider's Insider.
Joining us now with his thoughts and to break it down, John Rothstein.
It's College Hoops Today with John Rothstein.
Let's put the women and children to bed and go looking for dinner. John Rothstein here on the College Hoops Today podcast. Later in the show, we will be joined by Nevada head coach Eric Musselman. Want to remind you to subscribe to the College Hoops Today podcast on iTunes. We want to be your Bible for the college basketball season and beyond. We are the only college basketball podcast coming to you 52 weeks out of the calendar year. And also want to remind you to check out the College Hoops Today fan page on Facebook. Give us a like, give us a review. Let us know what you think of the product we're bringing to you 52 weeks out of the calendar year. And also send me your questions on Twitter. I'll get to them later in this podcast. I'm at John Rothstein. That's John, J-O-N. And today's episode of the College Hoops Today podcast being brought to you by ZipRecruiter. You know what's smart? Figuring out who you need to hire to take your business to the next level in 2019. You know what else is smart? Starting the new year off strong by going to ZipRecruiter.com/hoops today to hire the right people. Unlike other job sites, ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates for you. Its powerful matching technology scans thousands of resumes to identify people with the right skills, education, and experience, and actively invites them to apply to your job so you get qualified candidates fast. That's why ZipRecruiter is rated number one by employers in the U.S. This rating comes from hiring sites on Trustpilot with over 1,000 reviews. And right now, my listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/hoops today. If you love this show, show your support to it and ZipRecruiter as well by going to ZipRecruiter.com/hoops today. HOOPSTODAY. That's ZipRecruiter.com/hoops today. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And now that we've got you set for all your ZipRecruiter needs, we want to get into the main thoughts from the weekend as we are now less than 7 weeks away from Selection Sunday. And look, I've spent a lot of time on this podcast talking about Kentucky and their resurgence since early December, and you saw that again last week. Kentucky beat a good Mississippi State team at home by over 20 points, and then I thought they controlled the second half against Kansas in the Big 12 SEC Challenge. But the big thing you need to look at right now with Kentucky is PJ Washington may have benefited more from coming back to school than any other player who went through the NBA draft process last spring. He's getting better every game, and he again is an example of players that aren't one and done flourishing when they come back for their sophomore year. And I'll say this right now. For a long time this college basketball season, I think everybody was in agreement that there were six teams that were separated from the rest. Michigan, Michigan State, Duke, Virginia, Gonzaga, and of course, you have to consider what we were going to see from a team that I think has been enigmatic, from a team that I think is going to be a little bit maligned because they're not a traditional team in terms of NCAA tournament runs, and that's Tennessee. Tennessee, to me, is the team that I think people are not sold on because they haven't won in the tournament. They were a team that was knocked out in the round of 32 last year by Loyola Chicago. But those six teams, Tennessee, Duke, Virginia, Gonzaga, Michigan, Michigan State, have been the top six for the majority of the season. I was never sold on Kansas, even without Udoka Azubuike joining that group. But now I'm starting to think that you have to put Kentucky in that tier, and the top six has now become a top seven. And it's not just because of what I was saying about PJ Washington. It's also because of Reed Travis, who is literally abusing his opponents in the low block. And I think you can say safely right now that at 3-4-5 with Keldon Johnson, PJ Washington, Reed Travis, Kentucky's 3-4-5 is better than any other 3-4-5 in college basketball. Other thoughts from the weekend that stood out: Houston's the first team in college basketball to have 20 wins this season. Is it time to start talking now about Kelvin Sampson as a National Coach of the Year candidate? We're getting clear separation in the American Conference with Houston and Cincinnati at the top. Cincinnati went to Temple, won the game after being down by 14. They're now 18-3 Okay, they've lost one game in conference play, a road loss to East Carolina. Cincinnati lost two players to the NBA, Jacob Evans, Gary Clark, and a fifth-year starter in Kyle Washington who's playing professionally overseas. You could maybe start to say now that this is one of the better coaching jobs that Mick Cronin has done at his alma mater, but two NCAA tournament teams in that league, I think, each and every year, as long as Mick Cronin's at Cincinnati and Kelvin Sampson is at Houston. There are several teams going in the wrong direction that I think are off the radar nationally. The first is Texas, who gave up over 95 points in a road loss against Georgia on Saturday in the Big 12 SEC Challenge. This is the upcoming stretch for Texas, who is 11-9 right now overall. You have Kansas at home on Tuesday night in Austin. Shaka Smart is 0-7 against Kansas since he became the head coach of Texas in 2015. Keep in mind, when he was at VCU, he did beat Kansas in an Elite Eight game when VCU went to the Final Four 8 years ago. And then after playing Texas, you go to Iowa State to play the Cyclones at Hilton Coliseum. Now, I will say this. I don't think that you are going to see a team have a decisive advantage over Kansas in the Big 12 because Kansas is so good at Fog Allen Fieldhouse. But I will say this. Right now, if you're looking long-term ceiling on a neutral court, I think Iowa State has the highest ceiling out of any other team in the Big 12. Now, why do I say that? You've got great spacing. You've got great decision makers. Tyrese Halliburton, Nick Weiler-Babb, and also you have the ability to cause mismatches all over the floor. And the guy that's really started to separate himself, in my opinion, in the last week is Talen Horton-Tucker. 6'4", broad-shouldered, can score. He's a bit of an X-factor for this basketball team. And another team that I think is starting to dip in addition to Texas is St. John's. St. John's, 15-5 overall, but 3-5 in Big East play. Gave up 89 points in a loss on Sunday to Georgetown. And this is the upcoming game schedule for St. John's. At Creighton on Wednesday night. Then you go at Duke. Then you go at Marquette. If St. John's could win one game on that trip, you would sign right now. Other things to keep in mind right now as it relates to the Big East, and we're going to piggyback off St. John's. Part of having a breakthrough season in college basketball is winning games that you have to win. St. John's hasn't done that. They've lost to Georgetown and DePaul at home in a season that they hope to break through and make the NCAA tournament. The team that is capitalizing and the team, in my opinion, that's doing a better job of maybe any other team in the country that's taking care of business when it has to is Marquette. Marquette 6-0 in games decided by 5 points or less, and these are the things that need to happen if a program wants to have a breakthrough season. Now, breakthrough seasons are not obviously something that you associate with Purdue, but Purdue, to me, took a major step on Sunday by getting a signature win against Michigan State. And to me, what you're seeing in the Big Ten is this, and you're seeing this more and more as leagues boast great depth early in the schedule. You saw it with the ACC a couple of years ago when the ACC looked deeper than the Big East in 2010, 2011, when the Big East had 11 teams in the NCAA tournament. But leagues that are that deep, like the ACC 2 years ago when you had a 14th place team, NC State, with the ninth pick in the draft and Dennis Smith go and win a game against Duke at Cameron Indoor Stadium. Leagues that are that deep cannibalize themselves, and you're seeing that right now in the Big Ten. Illinois goes and beats Maryland by double figures at Madison Square Garden. All of a sudden, Indiana has lost six straight games, one of which we brought to you here on Compass Media Networks Friday night against Michigan, where they were down 20-2 at home. And also you have to look at what happened with Nebraska. The Cornhuskers looked like an NCAA tournament team, a dangerous NCAA tournament team. They lose Isaac Copeland for the year due to a torn ACL. The Big Ten is cannibalizing itself. I don't see 10 NCAA bids on Selection Sunday. I see 7, maybe 8. But Purdue, to me, now has to be talked about in the conversation as the type of team that could make the second weekend of the NCAA tournament. And that's very impressive when you consider what this team lost from a season ago. PJ Thompson, ultimate ball security type of point guard. Dakota Mathias, tremendous glue guy. Vince Edwards as a hybrid small ball forward. And, of course, Isaac Haas. And I've said this on different forums. I don't think I've said it here on the College Hoops Today podcast, but I'm going to draw the parallel again. In a lot of ways, Matt Painter is becoming the Big Ten's new version of Bo Ryan. Bo Ryan, regardless of personnel, was always going to finish in the top four of the Big Ten standings. And Matt Painter has had an off season or two, but now you're starting to see, regardless of who's wearing the jerseys, the product for Purdue looks very similar. You could say the last couple of years, the product's been very similar at Nevada as well. Is this the best team that Eric Musselman has had since he came to Reno as head coach? We'll find out when Eric Musselman, the head coach of Nevada basketball, joins the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein coming up next. Nevada is 19-1 through 20 games this season. The Wolfpack are the team to beat in the Mountain West Conference, one of the best teams in the country. And the head coach of Nevada is Eric Musselman. And, Coach, you know, you spent a lot of time putting together a very difficult non-conference schedule. What do you think your reaction would have been in October if somebody said after 20 games you're going to be 19-1?
Well, John, first of all, thanks so much for having me on. But we would have probably been a little bit shocked, obviously. You know, some of the games that we had three Pac-12s. And, you know, when you think about playing at Utah, and they're really difficult to play at home. And then obviously USC is a difficult team to play at home as well. And then a neutral site game against ASU. Those three games, you know, kind of stood out when we had our non-conference schedule. And then, you know, to play Loyola of Chicago, you know, was a difficult environment for us because of the Sweet 16 matchup. And, you know, actually Loyola had one of their better players get hurt in that game. And I think that's affected their record for 8 or 9 games after our game. So we felt like, you know, like just like the prior year that we did what we had to from a non-conference scheduling standpoint, and then to go out and go undefeated in non-conference. You know, we probably did not think that was possible at the beginning of the year.
Now, you've had 20 games to digest this team. What are the biggest differences in this Nevada team versus the one who made the Sweet 16 last season?
Well, I think that, you know, there's two things that stand out, and they're both on different sides of the basketball, John. First of all, we're a much, much better defensive team than we were last year. Last year, we were not a great defensive team. We had no rim protection, which really killed us against Loyola. I thought Porter Moser did a great job of getting his guys just to drive the ball at us because we were virtually playing Jordan Caroline at center at 6'7". And now we've been able to slide Caroline to that small forward spot, so we're more physical from a defensive standpoint. And offensively, for the most part, we've probably faced 85-90% zone, and teams just kind of daring us to make shots from the outside. We've been, you know, streaky from the outside, not as good, especially from a number standpoint, shooting the three ball as we were the prior year. But what we see in practice, we think eventually over the course of the season will even itself out, because what we see is just as good, if not a better, three-point shooting team behind closed doors when we practice and go live, and then also when we do individual shooting drills or team shooting drills. We feel like the numbers should be better than what they are right now. But I think we're one of only a handful of programs that are in the top 25 offensively and defensively efficiency. I think there's 7 of us that are in the top 25, and we're one of those. So we got to keep getting better on both sides of the ball, but we're taller, longer, better rim protecting than we were last year.
Now, this is a new dynamic, not just for you, but for Nevada basketball in general. People expected you to be good at the start of last season, but you've had to undertake the responsibility right now of more media exposure, more expectations, all of that in addition to trying to get your team to be the best it can be. Having gone through this right now for a little more than half a season, how much newfound respect do you have for programs like Duke, Villanova, Kansas, who deal with this type of expectations on an annual basis?
I really can't even put it into words, the respect that I have for programs that have to deal with this type of pressure. I do think that the Sweet 16 run last year really, really helped us understand what the added media exposure. And I think you have two ways to go about it, John. You can either embrace it and allow a lot of media accessibility, or you can close your doors off and not let anybody in. And what we, because of recruiting, we've you know, allowed as much media exposure, open door policy as we possibly can, and it's brought us a tremendous amount of national publicity, not only just for the basketball program, but more importantly for the entire university. And I felt through that those first 10 games, that we were going to kind of see how we were able to handle it. And through 20 games, I couldn't be prouder. We played a very poor game against New Mexico. They deserve all the credit. They bothered us on both sides of the basketball. But we didn't play very well at all either from our perspective. And so I think when you go through a 20-game segment, you're going to have a bad game. Just like in the NBA, over 82 games, you're going to have 10 to 12 games where you don't play up to your ability. And so through 20 games throughout most of the country, you could probably ask anybody, and they've had a game that they would like to get back or would like to play better than what they did. But we haven't let the outside pressure affect us. And I think now, because we're 20 games into this thing, I don't think it will affect us. I think if we lose a game, it's just going to be because we're not playing up to our ability. But I don't think it's affected us from a mental standpoint as much as we were concerned going into the season.
You know, it's interesting you brought up the New Mexico game. That was the first sign of adversity that this group has really dealt with. What was the message to the team in the locker room after the game?
Well, there was obviously a great deal of disappointment. Not only with the coaching staff, but more importantly with the players. And we were able to regroup, and we've played really good basketball since the New Mexico game. And, again, during the course of the season, you're going to have adversity. Every team does. And then it's really how you handle it, and then the adjustments that you make as a staff, and then the adjustments that the players make. And really, John, I think we had gone through that non-conference and we were feeling good about ourselves, and we hadn't lost a game. And I think sometimes as a travel party, you walk into an arena and you just think you're going to win. And so what a loss does is it allows you to reevaluate. It allows you to understand that when you walk in and the referees throw the ball up, there's a 50-50 chance every night, that you're either going to win or lose. And that's the one aspect that when your program grows and you hit a certain level, people just think you're going to win a game, and they don't understand, unless you've coached or been in it, how hard, how difficult every single game is, and how each game's got its own identity, its own theme, and you got to go earn it. And I think our guys understand that. We have tremendous respect for everybody that we play every night.
Nevada head coach Eric Musselman joining the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein. Nevada 19-1 heading into Tuesday's showdown with UNLV. Now, I'm curious, because you've been through both sides of this and you're going through the latter part right now. For you personally, what's been harder, building Nevada's program or sustaining it each and every year since you made the NCAA tournament for the first time?
I think that those two words, John, like building and I think they're both hard. They both have their own, challenges. I think that, when you're building it, it's how are you going to do it? What type of people are you going to be recruiting? And then sustaining it's hard because of expectations and oftentimes unrealistic expectations. But I think they both have their own challenges. Certainly for us, it was a four-year plan, and how do we grow each of those 4 years? And then, next year, we still feel like we're going to have a great program, and we're losing a lot of guys, but we have some guys sitting out that we feel are really, really talented, fit our culture great. So I think that both of them are hard. It's hard to build and get your team to an NCAA tournament, and then it's even harder to repeat and get back into that tournament. And we've done it back-to-back years, and certainly we got a lot of work to still do to put ourselves in a good position and to make the tournament, because that's everybody's goal, no matter if you're a Power 5 playing in the ACC or the Big 10 or Pac-12, is how do you just get into that tournament, and then you have a new season once that happens.
You know, Eric, it's interesting because you took over a program that did not have great tradition a couple of years ago, and in less than 5 years, you made it into the flagship program in the Mountain West Conference. The general trajectory of any coach who doesn't coach in a power conference as a head coach for the first time is to build up and then obviously try to take the best possible job he can get. How much now that you've went to the NCAA tournament and went on a run, do you see the challenge of doing maybe what Mark Few did at Gonzaga versus maybe taking the normal path that everybody chooses to take?
Well, I think, John, you know, number one, like, my path is so much different than quote-unquote the normal path, because I've only been in college basketball for a really short time, and so I love where I'm at. Right now, we're a national brand recruiting-wise. People know who we are. They know what our style of play is. And you know, I think that, you know, normally when somebody's coaching at a mid-major and they look to move on, a lot of it is career-wise. It could be somebody younger. It could be somebody that's financially driven. Because I've had the opportunity to coach at the NBA level with two different organizations, I'm not driven by some of the same things that other people are. And maybe if I hadn't had the opportunity to coach at the pro level, you know, maybe my thought process would be different. But, you know, we certainly feel like right now with Nevada that we're moving into the direction of, if you can get to a third straight NCAA tournament, it certainly puts you, because we all want to be able to recruit the highest level player that we possibly can. And I think we're getting to that point where players understand who we are. We just had two transfers that came here, one from Pitt, and both guys, and Duquesne transferred, neither one took an official visit, and they kind of watched us play and decided this style of play is what they wanted to come to. And I think when that stuff starts happening, it makes the job a lot easier.
Interesting you brought up, you want to recruit the best players in the country. A lot of people probably forget, because you have such an old team, that last year you landed one of the best high school players in the country in Jordan Brown. He got an opportunity last week to produce in some extended minutes against Colorado State, and you've also made, you know, obviously a known effort to put, you know, more minutes in the game for other parts of your reserves, guys like Corey Henson. How much is developing your depth over the next month something that you're really focusing on as you get ready for hopefully another big run in March?
Well, you know, certainly with Jordan Brown, every day when we're in practice, it's our staff's job to try to continue to his growth. He's done a really good job in the weight room. And I think the hardest thing for us as a staff and the hardest thing for a player like Jordan Brown is just he's playing with guys that are 4 and 5 years older than him. And he's going to be a great player, and he's a great player now. But it's just part of the process, especially you know, with the guy, the caliber of player and the age and the physicality of some of the guys that we have. But yes, we started Jordan a couple games ago against San Jose State. We wanted him to get a feel as a starter. And then Corey Henson, we had moved him into the starting lineup for 4 or 5 games. And so, you know, our fifth starter is going to kind of fluctuate with us. It could be Trey Thurman some nights. It could be Jordan Brown. It could be Corey Henson, and I think that we certainly want to continue to try to grow the depth of our bench. But having said that, we've got guys that are kind of iron men that are used to playing a lot of minutes, and that's Cody, Caleb Martin, and Jordan Caroline. Those three guys are used to playing a ton of minutes, and I've stated a bunch that I think depth is semi overrated in the college game, just because of, you know, you're not playing a 48 minute game like the NBA. You're not playing 82 games. You're playing 30 games. But certainly we want to continue to develop the depth of our bench on a nightly basis.
You know, you mentioned Jordan Caroline, and I know that a lot of people obviously look at the Martin twins, and for good reason, when they talk about Nevada basketball, because they came in with the cachet of playing at NC State. But this is somebody, and I've said it, you know, on multiple forums, he's the least appreciated player in college basketball. There's nobody above him on that list. For you personally to watch him produce game after game, what is it like to have somebody who's so valuable to Nevada but is maybe undervalued outside the program?
I mean, there's no doubt. You know, Jordan was one of the first players that we recruited with him. And he gives us an identity because of his toughness. There's not many players, John, that could play against Mo Bamba and front him in an NCAA tournament and then turn around and the couple game, you know, a summer later and your opening night moves to the small forward spot. But that's the type of versatility that Jordan Caroline has. And I do think you're right. I've seen your tweets about him being so underappreciated from a national standpoint. I couldn't agree with you more. I think internally in our league, everybody really understands because he's just one of the toughest people and players that you can ever be around. And now he's really improved as a three-point shooter. He's actually probably our second best three-point shooter, and he continues to develop parts of his game with his beating people off the bounce and the dribble in isolation situations. And against presses, we oftentimes have him be our secondary or third ball handler. So his development's been tremendous.
Nevada head coach Eric Musselman joined the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein. Wolfpack 19-1 heading into Tuesday night's game at UNLV. Now, there's also a family element to your program now because your son is in the office working with you and obviously learning the coaching business as a GA. I'm curious, how does the feeling of working with your son every day and getting that type of satisfaction from being around family compare to the feelings you have when you win a Mountain West Conference title or you go to the Sweet 16?
Well, you know, John, I think number one, to have a family member where you can walk in every day and work with them is so unique and so cool. I mean, I did it with my dad with the Timberwolves, and it was the greatest year of my life. Now that he's no longer with us, that I can look back at that time with great memories. And certainly Michael, who just graduated from the University of San Diego, wants to get into the coaching business. And it's hard, too. I'm sure it's hard for him back in the back room, the graduate assistant room, because his dad is the head coach. It presents different challenges for him. But for me to be able to walk in and say good morning and say goodbye at the end of the workday to your son is the most incredible feeling ever. And you know, I was divorced, and so I wasn't always there for Michael at all of his games. And obviously, as a coach, you're traveling, and there was a couple years where I lived in Memphis working with the Grizzlies, and he was in the Bay Area, and so you have a pain and a void in your heart when you're not there on a daily basis to be with your sons, and certainly now both of us feel like we're getting some lost time back.
Well, that's obviously some great perspective right there and something you don't take for granted. But as you look back now on your evolution, how do you think you're different as a head coach right now versus when you coached your last game in the NBA?
Oh, John, so much different. I really enjoy the camaraderie of you know, traveling with the guys. And in the NBA, you know, your job is basically to try to help the player become better, improve his stock, so to speak. And then from a schematic standpoint, to try to help that player beat the opponent that night. But when you land in a city at 2 a.m, everybody goes in their own room. You don't eat with anybody for the most part. And then you practice at shoot around, go to a game, and then that cycle starts all over. And obviously at the collegiate level, you're basically a second parent to some degree. You're influencing your guys on stuff off the floor. And I think, you know, now for me personally, I enjoy coaching more. I'm not worried about the results like I was as a younger coach trying to grow in the business. I'm having a blast. Every day is a fun day, where in the past when I was coaching the Warriors or the Kings, I felt I was under a lot of stress for a variety of reasons. And so I think now it's just enjoying the process and enjoying and having much more fun than I did at a younger age when I was trying to find my way through you know, the business.
Well, and, you know, also, it's also a change, not just going from the NBA to college, but from being a college assistant to now being a college coach. What's the biggest difference in your life as a head coach in college versus when you were an assistant at Arizona State and LSU?
Well, you know, in my 2 years at Arizona State, I was just learning. I mean, I had no idea what a bye game was. I had no idea how a non-conference schedule was put together. At Arizona State, my first year was basically just more of a helping scheme-wise. I wasn't that involved with recruiting. I got a little bit more involved the second year. But then when I went to LSU, I think that that totally changed who I was. And Johnny Jones had me be such a big part of their recruiting, and he took me on trips and taught me how to do an in-home visit. I got to go to Orlando and see the process of recruiting a guy like Ben Simmons. And so really that year at LSU, you know, changed the complexion of how I could, you know, become a better recruiter, because I really didn't know. And the great thing is that for me especially was I went and was an assistant coach. I think if I would have gotten a head job at the collegiate level without my 3 years experience as an assistant coach, I would have failed miserably. And I'm certainly glad that I had to go be an assistant coach to learn, to be patient. But, you know, I think that so many guys that get an opportunity, you know, whether it's a college guy going to the NBA or vice versa, I think you really need to become an assistant coach because the two games are completely different.
Well, you've done obviously a great job as a head coach. You're 19-1 heading into Tuesday's game at UNLV. Every game is an important game if you're a competitive person. But what types of feelings are you experiencing right now being the premier team in your league and going to a place in UNLV that has obviously the type of tradition and obviously the heritage that you've always had a reverence for as a basketball junkie?
Well, growing up in San Diego, California, you know, UNLV with Coach Tark and the Running Rebels, like that's, I mean, I remember walking around in Running Rebels shirts and when I was in junior high, and then I go to college and I actually room with Danny Tarkanian, one of Coach Tark's sons, and his other son, Danny, when he was done playing at UNLV, went to law school at USD the same time that I was there. So it's a big game. It's a big game for boosters. It's a big game for alumni, former players. For us, you know, right now, it's kind of been this way the whole year. When we go on the road, it's the other team's Super Bowl, and with that becomes, you know, we have a responsibility on the way that we prepare mentally before we even step into Thomas and Mack, and it's that way every single night. It's hard for our guys, John, to understand that the other team is playing at a whole other emotional level than they normally do. And that's part of the growth and understanding that we're still learning. And again, why you have to really have a tremendous amount of respect for the Gonzagas and the Dukes and teams that do it night after night, year after year, where they are the opposing team's seventh game of an NBA championship.
Final thing, Must, you know, we're, you know, less than 7 weeks away from Selection Sunday right now, and after the Super Bowl on Sunday, we're going to transition to the time of year where college basketball takes the spotlight. What are the biggest things that need to happen in the next month and a half for your team and your program to be in an even better position than you were a year ago when things really got going in the middle of March?
I think one is just how, you know, for every coach is talking about how do they peak at the right time. And fortunately for us, the last 3 years, even the year we didn't make the NCAA tournament, we were peaking towards the end of the year. And we want to try to be on that same trajectory, healthy as well. I think that's really important, how you deal with your practices in February and those first week and a half in March. Like, how are you practicing to keep your team healthy and mentally and physically fresh? And then we got to get better. I mean, we got to continue to get better offensively. We want to try to play at a little bit faster pace than we have at certain junctures this year. And we want to continue to get better defensively. Our pick and roll coverage continues to be really good, but you know, there's always holes that you have to improve on, and we certainly want to do that. And I think the bottom line for us is, how do we improve our overall team shooting percentage is the biggest thing going into March that we want to try to get better at.
Well, Moss, I appreciate you giving us a couple minutes to visit. Good luck Tuesday against UNLV, and look forward to staying connected the rest of the way.
John, thanks so much for having me on. It's awesome.
We'd like to thank Nevada head coach Eric Musselman for joining the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein. I want to remind you to subscribe to the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein on iTunes. We want to be your Bible for the college basketball season and beyond. We are the only college basketball podcast coming to you 52 weeks out of the calendar year. Also want to remind you to check out the College Hoops Today fan page on Facebook. Give us a like, give us a review. Let us know what you think the product we're bringing to you 52 weeks out of the calendar year. And we want to let you know today's episode of the College Hoops Today podcast being brought to you by our good friends at Geico. Did you know that there is a quick way you could save money? Switch to Geico. All it takes is 15 minutes to find out if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. And Geico offers coverage for more than just car insurance. Got a motorcycle? Geico's got you covered. Got an RV? Covered. Got a boat? Covered. How about homeowners or renters insurance? You bet Geico's got you covered. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save. That's geico.com. Now that we've got you set for all your Geico needs, it's time for our social media portion of the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein. Send me your questions on Twitter. I'm at John Rothstein. That's John, J-O-N. And our first question comes from the B-Man11, and it's, hi, John. I'm a big Louisville fan. Are you high on them going forward? Absolutely. And, you know, I've talked about the job that Chris Mack has done in year one. The big thing you have to like right now if you're a Louisville fan is this. Louisville has proven in big spots that it's capable of beating high-level opponents. Dominated North Carolina and Chapel Hill, and also beat Michigan State at home. A lot of people are talking about Jordan War for good reason. The guy that people need to start paying attention to for Louisville is Dwayne Sutton, a hidden gem right now in the ACC. Our next question is going to come from Eric Thomas, and it's, John, does the ACC still go through Charlottesville? Eric, it's a fascinating question. Duke, to me, has the highest ceiling out of anybody in college basketball, and I don't think that's going to change. But I will say this. Virginia, if it beats Duke on February 9th in Charlottesville, will have a one-game lead on Duke as long as they don't lose any games, obviously, before that. And why could that be so important? This is one thing you need to remember if you're a Virginia fan. The East Regional Finals this year will be played in Washington, D.C. So if Virginia can beat out Duke and get the number one seed in the East Region, if Virginia advances to the Sweet 16 and the Elite Eight, it will play those games in Washington, D.C. That is a big, big thing to keep in mind as we come down the stretch here in the regular season. And our next question is from Dave Cotterns. John, how many Big East teams can make the NCAA tournament? You know, Dave, right now, the one thing we know in the Big East is we have two constants ahead of the pack, Villanova and Marquette. But you also have to keep in mind right now, as close as this league is, and a half game separates Georgetown in third place and Xavier in last place, this is what you need to remember. Providence has played in five straight NCAA tournaments, and the Friars got A.J. Reeves, their talented freshman, back Sunday against the Paul. That could be a team that you look to keep an eye on as we get set to go through the guts and the dog days of February. Providence, under Ed Cooley, has always gotten better as time has progressed. I think there's a good chance that the Friars will be playing their best basketball when it matters most, and that's obviously something that's a credit to Ed Cooley. He's been to five straight NCAA tournaments at a program, with all due respect, that isn't known for, let's face it, putting teams in the NCAA tournament regularly until Ed Cooley obviously got the job and got things going by winning the Big East tournament in 2014. That really started this run. And now we've got you set with all your social media needs, let's get to some nuggets.
Five good nuggets.
Five.
Six.
No, five. But you were close.
Nugget number one, staying in the Big East, getting to the line. This is Marcus Howard. The Marquette star has already attempted 155 free throws this season. He attempted 112 during all of last year. Nugget number two, fly in the ointment. If there is a fly in the ointment for Duke, it's their outside shooting. The Blue Devils are shooting just 26% from three-point range in seven ACC games. Nugget number three, the Austin Crossroads. Talking about Texas, I touched on this a little bit at the top. This is a do-or-die week for Shaka Smart. 11-9 overall. The next two games for the Longhorns, Kansas at home on Tuesday night in Austin, and then at Iowa State. Nugget number four, Trojan Rising. USC now looks more than relevant in the Pac-12 after a sweep of Arizona and Arizona State. Benny Boatwright is back in vintage form. The Trojans are healthy with Kevin Porter Jr. back, the talented freshman in the lineup. This is a team that has the talent to go and win the Pac-12 tournament. And again, you never know how many bids is going to come out of that league, probably until championship week. Nugget number five, a bracket buster to watch. Hofstra has now won 16 games in a row. The Pride haven't lost since November 24th at VCU. Hofstra, two calendar months and counting without a loss. Very impressive run for Joe Mihalik and company, who have a tremendous mid-major guard in Justin Wright Foreman. Now let's get the games to watch, brought to you by Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
Games to watch.
Tuesday night we start Virginia at NC State. Great contrast in styles. Cavaliers only had two turnovers Saturday at Notre Dame. They will be tested by the Wolfpack pressure. Kansas at Texas. Mississippi State at Alabama. Every game in the SEC feels like a big game. Lamar Peters again looking like the X factor for the Bulldogs, who are 3-3 in SEC play. 16 points, 10 assists to just two turnovers in Saturday's win against Auburn. Wednesday night, Marquette at Butler. And then Thursday, Temple at Houston. Talked about Houston earlier in the show. Got to start looking at Kelvin Sampson as a National Coach of the Year candidate. The only loss for the Cougars so far this season, a two-point defeat on the road against, you guessed it, Temple. We'd like to thank Nevada head coach Eric Musselman for joining the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein. We'll be back next week, same bat time, same bat channel. This was the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein.